You're listening to Trek FM.
Want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode? Join the Babel Conference, our listeners' discussion group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field, and we look forward to seeing you there.
This is Steve Sansweet of Rancho Obi-Wan, and you're listening to the 602 Club.
Well, hello and welcome to TFM's local watering hole. So excited to be back with you here. We've got some great stuff in store for you this year, and I'm really glad to welcome back my good friend Rye. Rye, how's it going, man?
It's going good. Yeah, excited to talk more movies as always.
Yeah, man. You know, I realized I actually forgot to introduce myself, but if anybody's been listening to this show long enough, you unfortunately know this voice. My name is Matt, and it's great to have everybody with us. You can find us all over the place, wherever you get your podcast. You know, actually, go over to Apple Podcasts and give us a star rating and review. You know, that those truly do change the ratings for a show, in the sense of it pushes it out to people, it helps people find the show. It also, it actually does wonders. One of my other shows, we got a new review, and our listenership went up by like 100-150 listens just because of a brand new review on Apple Podcasts. So yes, when we say that, we're not just blowing smoke. It actually does make a difference. And so we would love it if you would do that for us. Of course, you could find us anywhere you get podcasts. And one of the other best ways to help podcasts grow is just to share us out with your friends. So, you know, let your friends know if you like this show, that it's a good listen. And you can also find us all over the place online. We've got our brand new website going now, and I'm really excited to allow everybody to see this. It's tfm.fan is the place that you can find the new website, so check that out. You can also find us online with Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. You can find us on Instagram at trekfm, or of course you can find us at the 602 Club TFM, and of course we're on X Twitter at the 602 Club. So Rye, we decided there's not a ton in the movie theater. I unfortunately saw Mercy, and so
yeah,
it wasn't really worth, I don't think, talking about it here on the show. Mm-hmm. But a movie that had been getting some acclaim and is brand new to Netflix is called The Rip, and it stars none other than Matt Damon and Ben Affleck. And so the duo is back, which is always a win, mm-hmm. If you ask me, yeah, because I love those two guys together. And so I first just wanted to ask you this before we even kind of like dive into this. This wasn't even in the outline, but I wanted to ask you how you approach watching movies that come out just on a streaming platform. Like, because this is clearly a film that seems like it was made for something else. Like, you know, you could put it on the big screen, and instead it's been relegated to a streaming service. And so, and that is neither good nor bad necessarily for a film. A film is either going to be good or it's not going to be good, and it's not necessarily about where you get to see it. But I just wanted to ask you, as our world is changing and everything, how do you approach that, watching films on streaming? Does it make a difference to you, the way that you even approach the movie when you just fire it up than when you walk into the movie theater?
Yeah, I think that there's like some caveats to it. When I fire up something on streaming, whether it's Netflix or a Prime movie or whatever, like there's movies that are put out on streaming because they've been bought by Netflix. They premiered at a film festival. My favorite movie last year premiered at a film festival, was bought by Netflix. Totally different game. And then it's also like, who's the movie being made by? Because when you have if we think of last year's Netflix releases, there's a lot of them, obviously, but you have Guillermo del Toro, who made Frankenstein. I go into that differently than an action movie that Netflix is making. Or I loved Wake Up Dead Man. That's a guy, Rian Johnson, who gets creative. Is the streamer giving creative freedom to the company, to the streamer, or is it the new you know, Jason Momoa and Dave Bautista, you know, generic
wrecking crew,
the wrecking
right?
crew, right? Like, yeah, I know yeah. what I'm going to get with that. Whether it's going to be good or bad is, you know, most likely it's going to be fine to bad. And it's like, you know, that's that. But knowing who's behind it and who's like has the authority almost to like work with Netflix and be like, if you want this, we're going to make this like differently than you would, you know, just kind of pump and dump a movie. And so like going into this movie, it's like, yeah, I trust that Ben Affleck and Matt Damon in their production company that they started, Artist Equity, that they're like, they're going to make a good movie. And I'm expecting something entertaining, fun, but also quality and not just, you know, some movies that Netflix is just in-house producing, getting sure. any director yep, yep. that would make it, you know?
Yeah, it's a great point. No, I think that's really well said. You know, I think the only other thing that I would add to that that I kind of bring in when I'm watching a film on a streaming service that hasn't been released in the theaters, and that tends to be just, you know, who is the director of that?
Yeah.
Right? Because a lot of times that can happen these mm-hmm. days with these movies. Like, I think Apple Studios does this, and they might buy a film as well. Mm-hmm. Now, they've had some major clunkers. You know, Argyle was terrible, unfortunately. So yeah. Because and which sucked because one, I absolutely love Bryce Dallas Howard. Uh-huh. I love Henry Cavill.
Yeah.
You know, I thought the conceit was really funny as an idea, and it just turned out to be not a good movie.
Totally.
And so you mentioned Guillermo del Toro and Frankenstein. I went into that really excited because I do enjoy del Toro's work. His Pinocchio was fantastic. Mm-hmm. You know,
another great example of a Netflix yeah. movie.
Exactly. And they did such a good job with it, giving him license to basically do what he wanted there.
Yep.
And it was great. Mm-hmm. And so Frankenstein, though, turned out to be a complete misfire for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's interesting because some of these movies, like, you know, look, if you're watching at Christmas time and it's the new Netflix Christmas movie that you're watching with your wife, you're not going to get like probably stellar quality there. And you know that going
yes.
in. But there is a place where you're watching these films that are done by these premier directors or have actual stars in them, mm-hmm. like a Ben Affleck, Matt Damon. These guys know how to make movies. They've written award-winning films,
yeah.
and they're award-winning directors themselves, mm-hmm. at least Ben Affleck is.
Yep.
And of course, they're award-winning actors, too. So it's like we expect going into these type of movies, I think, more. And mm-hmm. and so in some ways, it's not all that different than going to the theater, but I will say it does feel like to me there's always a bit of an asterisk to the film in mm-hmm. the sense of like, yeah, it was on Netflix.
Yeah.
And so if it's not as good, you know, it almost feels like I can say, oh, it was just on Netflix. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, I feel like I need to stop doing that.
Yeah.
And not because the medium doesn't matter, seeing it on the big screen or the small screen. Mm-hmm. That actually does really matter.
Yeah.
But I think I need to just stop saying that because I know that nobody necessarily sets out to make a bad film.
No, of course not. Yeah.
And so these movies, whether they're good or not, should just be determined. And for me, I just need to yeah, it's about whether or not the film itself was good. And did the director do a good job? Did the actors do a good job? Mm-hmm. Was it well produced? You know, was the cinematography good? Like all those things shouldn't have anything to do with whether or not it's on Netflix.
Yeah.
You know, so
to be fair to Netflix, there's plenty of movies I'm going to see this year. There's plenty of movies I saw last year that I know walking into that theater, I get my popcorn, whatever. I know it's going to be bad and it could have been on Netflix because I know I've seen the trailer. I know who the director is. They've made
yeah.
nothing, you know, it is yeah. very similar. Obviously it's easy to just blame Netflix for a bad movie.
Yeah, it is. And look, I think that, you know, because we're here on this question, I do think something that you had brought up, mm-hmm. For us to talk about was this idea of the Netflixification of movies. And so just to explain a little bit about what you mean about that.
Yeah. So there's lots of angles, obviously, to it. There's like what people will describe as like the Netflix look, where like a movie looks bad. That's not with this movie. But there's something that Matt Damon said in an interview on, I believe it was on Joe Rogan, him and Ben Affleck did it, where he says that Netflix asks them like literally specifically to reiterate the plot 3 or 4 times in the dialogue throughout the movie, because they're anticipating that viewers of the movie will be sitting on their couch being distracted by their phone. They're not looking at their screen and paying attention, but they're just kind of hearing it in the background. And that literally they're trying to make sure they understand the movie knowing they'll be on their phones, which is obviously a very new phenomenon. And so I kind of think that's the Netflixification. It's kind of the look, and then like what they do with dialogue specifically.
Yeah, I think that idea of making a second screen film is kind of a big part of, you know, what they're talking about. The fact that you're making a movie and then you're planning on in that the people are just going to be watching something else or doing something else is kind of crazy to me. And it, you know, it almost seems like in that then, you know, we're placating the worst impulses of humanity instead of just being like, why don't we just try to make a good movie? And if you can't pay attention, that's not our fault. And so, yeah, I find that to be, I would say I find that to just kind of be insulting, that that's kind of what they think about their audience and that they're willing then to play down to the audience so much. Honestly, I find it to just be a little bit sad.
Yeah.
That's where we are.
It is really sad. I totally agree. Like, yeah, it's just playing to the fact, like, our worst issues, that we have the worst attention span in history, and like not even recognizing the fact that there are movies that like hit the general, you know, public that are phenomenal, that are not made like this by Netflix or whatever, that there's a huge, you know, like people know how to watch movies. People still love movies, even the general public that watches, you know, a handful of movies a year. Just make a good movie. People will watch it if it's a good movie, you know. You don't have to, like, you know, anticipate they're doing their laundry. Hopefully you want an audience that's, like, sitting down on a Friday night with their family and friends or alone or whatever, turning on to watch something that you believe was crafted well and will entertain people and, you know, whatever. So it's wild.
Yeah, it almost feels memeable in the sense of, you know, I've seen those memes where it's like me being asked by my mother-in-law or my wife what's going to happen next in a movie we're both just watching for the first time, you know? It's like, I don't know. I guess we'll have to watch it to find out. It's in that way, this is a thing that I think just kind of has been happening for a long time, ever since, you know, the ability to just stream something became more and more prevalent, that people would not be able to pay attention to what's on screen because they're being distracted by the things that are around them. You know, I mean, that's one of the joys of like going to the movie theater in that sense, is because, you know, the movie theater does all it can to make the film as accessible as possible by taking away as many distractions as possible. That's why the room is dark and all that kind of stuff. So it is kind of fascinating to me the way that now we're having to compete with, I ran out of the room to get my laundry or, you know, some such nonsense. And so, yeah, I find that all this really interesting. And it is... I wanted to ask you this. So then with that thought, knowing that that's the case, or that at least they you know, we're asked to keep this in contention for them. Do you think that happened? Like, do you feel like with this movie that it did feel any different than something you might see Ben Affleck and Matt Damon put out in a movie theater? Did you feel like that they were just continually, you know, rephrasing the plot and what's happening, or did it just feel quote unquote normal?
That's a good question. I rewatched it, like looking for it, and you can definitely like hear it kind of throughout, but on first watch, when I first just sat down to watch the movie, I didn't like notice, like actively notice it. There was, you know, there are times where they're repeating things, or, you know, the way that the movie plays out, they explain the whole movie again, like kind of they're revealing stuff, but there's like that aspect of it. But I didn't like watch it and be like, that felt like a quote unquote Netflix movie. I just watched it and I was like, I enjoyed this. I had fun. I thought it was, you know, fairly well written. It's not perfect. I thought it looked good. Like it nothing like stood out to, at least for me. When there's definitely movies that I watch on, they go straight to Netflix, where you can definitely tell they keep saying everything over and over and over again, and you get used to it because you watch them a lot. But I didn't feel that way with this, at least.
I've only got a chance to see the movie once, and I did not feel as though overtly the movie kept having to restate what was happening for me in a way that pulled me out of the film.
Yeah.
I think they found the most organic ways to make that happen. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, one of the things that's interesting about the movie itself is that it says at the beginning that it is based off a true story.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to ask you then, as you come into the film, how does that hit you when you see that at the beginning of the movie? And did that enhance then the viewing of the film, kind of knowing that some of this stuff we don't, you know, unless you read the behind the scenes, you won't really know what was real and what wasn't. You know, one of the things that wasn't here is that in the real story, there wasn't a corrupt cop.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something they had added for the film.
Yeah.
But yeah, how does that either enhance or detract, or does that have any impact on your viewing of a film like this?
I just think it makes for certain movies, it definitely just makes it more interesting if you know the premise already going into it, and you're like, and you see that title card and then you didn't know prior. It's like, oh, I was already excited for this, but now it's pretty interesting, because at least the general premise of what's about to happen, you know, whether or not it's, like you said, completely accurate, they fabricate things, that's just movie making and storytelling. It's like, generally, whatever the heck's going to go on, the craziness of whatever this is did happen in some capacity, and that just makes things more interesting. It's like, oh, wow, like this place in Miami, that's a 6-hour flight away, that's in America, that this is a real place, that this is like legitimately happening. I just think it always makes movies more interesting, especially when the premise is crazy. Whether it's like a war movie, a cop, you know, the Rip, you know, whatever it is. It humanizes things. Like, these are real people that probably experience this stuff. It makes the lure, obviously, that obviously we learn about later throughout the film, more interesting, because it's like not someone just coming up with an idea. It's like, no, these guys do this for a living, and they face this temptation every day for their jobs, you know. It's fun. It makes things more interesting. Do you feel that way?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is one of those things where it's like, I really didn't know anything about this movie until it started. Mm-hmm. All I knew is that Ben Affleck and Matt Damon were in it, and it had something to do with them being cops.
Yeah.
And so, sometimes I just kind of love going into a film with not knowing a ton about it. There's plenty of times these days where I go into a film and I feel like I knew way too much about it. And yeah, so, right. And getting that opportunity to just sit back and kind of allow the film to wash over me, let it do what it wants to do with the story, take me somewhere that I've not been before. Mm-hmm. All that I thought was really well done in that sense. And I would say too, like the idea and knowing that this was based off a true story, mm-hmm. and knowing that, you know, cops face this type of thing was something that did enhance the film for me. Mm-hmm. I did feel like that by getting the opportunity to dive into this world, enough of it feels real, even if, you know, and I think that's the thing is that when they tell you that, I'm never looking for, oh, I wonder what's not real here and what is real here.
Yeah.
What I'm always surprised by, and I think what enhances my viewing of the film, is to think, okay, this is based off a true story, which that means that, you know, cops who are waging war against cartels in places like Miami, you know, you think of, you know, rural Texas down south, near the border, New Mexico, California, Arizona. This is the type of stuff that, you mean, gosh, that's what made Sicario kind of feel mm-hmm. So real, is because that's not based off a true story, but it's like, you know, that type of thing happens.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I mean, for me, coming into this and not knowing a lot about it, seeing that, it did enhance my viewing of the film and make it feel more interesting to me, just because I then feel for the way in which these cops have to deal with this sense of paranoia on all sides.
Mm-hmm.
In situations like this, because they are in boilerplate situations, you know, their lives are at risk. And I think you mentioned, and it's really well said, you know, they have to deal with, am I going to turn
mm-hmm.
for the money?
Yeah.
You know, am I going to get out of this, or am I going to stay on the quote unquote straight and narrow? And so mm-hmm. As an aspect of this film, because it's such an important part of the film, how did you feel like they did with that?
Yeah, I thought they did a great job. I kind of went into it blind. I knew Matt Damon, I knew Ben Affleck, and like the cast. I was excited for the cast. And then I knew like general action movie because they're cops. But I was surprised at how like they did like keep everything pretty under wraps in terms of the story. Like I felt very on edge the whole time. Like I felt very invested as they're going up into the attic and they're breaking through. It's like, holy crap, it's $20 million. Like that's a lot of money. And like sitting there talking to my wife, joking, like, would you take the money? What would you do? You know, like obviously we would say we would not take the money. But it's just interesting because that's like, right? Like they're the only ones there. They're the only ones that generally know about it and know the price. You know, what if they said it was $5 million and they split 15 and nobody would know? Like that's a tempting thing, I would assume, for just, you know, they're probably not making crazy amounts of money just being a police officer in Miami, you know? So things like that always enhance the viewing for me, where I can be put into their shoes and be like, I see the dilemma, I see what's going on. And then I think they did a really good job just kind of masking everything, making you feel very on edge, making you have just question after question. I was like, I want to understand why. I thought these guys were best friends. They said they were best friends.
Right.
Yeah. I have a hard time picturing them in real life not hating each other. They're literally best friends in real life. Like, and they did a really good job. I was confused. I was like, what the heck? I thought this was a movie where they're like, you know, not opposing
yes.
each other.
Yes.
And then you have great actors. You know, you have Tiana Taylor. You have Steven Yeun. Like, just being mysterious.
Kyle Chandler.
Dude, Kyle Chandler just showing up. I'm like, this movie rocks.
Like, sweet.
This is awesome. And the... there was always these like little hints of like, that's weird. Oh, that's weird. Oh, that's weird.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it super, I was like, just like sitting on my couch, eventually just like sitting up straight, you know, locking into the movie. And that's what you want from something like this.
Yeah. I like that you mentioned, just the idea of, would you take the money? Would you not take the money?
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was interesting, you know, just in the world we live in and having this movie come out now, because, yeah, look, we all know there are bad cops out there.
Mm-hmm.
But by and large, the men and women out there on the front lines serving one of the cops says, to hold back chaos from the civilized world.
Mm.
They just don't get paid enough for that.
Yeah.
And even in this movie, what we see that they go through, right? And it is because there is a large temptation out there, because these cartels can literally lose $20 million and they don't break a sweat.
Yeah, they literally throw a line in there where they're like, yeah, they're expecting you to cut their losses, so take what you want and just move on. Like, they're expecting that.
Yeah, which is insane.
Yeah.
Like, so, I mean, I think that is the thing that makes this an interesting movie right now specifically, but it also just makes it an interesting movie for the characters, because that paranoia and the way in which I thought you were right, the way they told the story, where even just between Dane and JD, that's Matt Damon and Ben Affleck's characters, the tension there I felt like was very real, mm-hmm. because there is a point in this movie where neither of them knows if they can trust the other.
Yeah.
Especially JD with Dane,
mm-hmm.
because it all adds up as to why he might flip, why he might try to take the money and run,
mm-hmm.
you know, like he's a Steve Miller Band song, and so I thought that part was really, really well done for the story, because it had me hooked in the sense of that, oh, that sucks that Matt Damon's dude is going to turn out to be the bad guy actually in this movie.
Yeah, I was like really concerned about it.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't want this.
Which makes sense, because like you said, you know, Matt Damon's almost never the bad guy.
Yeah.
And I thought that, again, the way that they play that, and this is the beauty, is like the way they do that then with the casting, we could see Ben Affleck possibly being the bad guy, because we've seen him play the bad guy before. But by going with Damon, who we almost never see play the bad guy.
Yeah.
It really does leave you wondering the whole time,
mm-hmm.
in the film, of what's going to happen with these guys. And then when the turn happens and you're like, oh, thank God.
Yeah.
You know, it's wonderful. But then not only that, but then I love the way in which it all resolves, mm-hmm. itself by them playing their parts so well.
Yeah.
That they rope everybody else into this so that they can actually smoke out who was actually on the wrong side here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a twist can be like either really satisfying and like you get all the answers and you're like, oh, that's so nice. Like, I enjoyed that. Or it could be like, oh, whatever. Like, you know, and I felt like I was like really satisfied. I think the avenue by which they did it was extremely I think it's probably my favorite scene in the movie is that car ride where the giant Humvee type thing.
Oh,
they're sitting,
yes.
in the back. It's basically just being lit from the street lamps and the lights outside, which is so good. But they're all just sitting there. Kyle Chandler, Steven Yeun, I mean, just fantastic actors. And it's the best acting in the whole movie. And yeah, they're revealing this twist. They're revealing the answer to the everything you've been wondering in this very clever way with what Damon's character and what he told each of his partners, figuring out who is, you know, in on it, trying to steal this rip. And yeah, I was like, wow, this is awesome. Like, I love every second of how they're revealing this satisfying twist to the movie. And I was happy that it, you know, he's like, Ben Affleck, you know, JD is like, yeah, I didn't know either until like 5 minutes ago. And when he told me, like, yes. Yeah, you know, like, cause it is you see the gun, obviously, when yep. Damon's in the house, it's just, yeah, very well done. I was very pleased with that.
What did you think about the aspect of this movie? You know, you have Damon's character who has lost his son, right? Mm-hmm. And he has on his hands, you know, the tattoos of "Are we the good guys?"
That is, that's good.
And then "We always will be," mm-hmm. and it's just the initials of every letter there.
Mm-hmm.
And what did you think about that? And did it work for you for this movie to kind of be an exploration then of how do you stay as good as you can in a world that seems to not care whether you actually go bad or not?
Yeah, I thought it was really well done. They did a really good job, obviously, setting up if Damon's going to be bad. They gave him the motivation. You know, Ben's character, JD, says, like, you know what happened to him, his wife, his kid, you know. You have Desi, the Sasha Kells character, being like, who's that on your mm-hmm. phone? Oh, it's my son. Very quiet about it. Very, like, reserved. I think that aspect of it is it creates this believability, obviously, first and foremost, of like, he could turn, no one would care, he could do it with everybody, you know, he could ride off and be okay. But the kind of the reveal that it's a conversation with his son, I think that's what it is, right? Where he, am I remembering that correctly? About are we the good guys? And it's like being the good guy means more than just like the money doesn't matter, but being a good father and a good person for his son, that like outweighs. And so it's like this hierarchy of like, what does it actually, like, what are you actually living for? If you're not living for anything, then who cares, right? Like, it doesn't matter. But if you have family, if you have obviously some guys like us, like faith, like all these things, they matter, and they kind of provide that, obviously, support to then do the right thing when temptation, that is more temptation than anyone we've ever experienced in terms of like doing something like that, you know. Mm-hmm. I thought it was really great. I thought it's a subtle thing that just kept building and provided like really nice character arc for Damon's character.
Yeah, I mean, I thought with that question that it was one of the strongest parts of the film. And what I liked about it was it doesn't show these guys, you know, any one of the team, guy, male, female, you know, being perfect, right? I mean, they bend the rules here with trying to go after this rip by, mm-hmm. you know, getting them to sign the document that says they're looking for drugs and they got the tip off and, mm-hmm. you know, and yet, you know, they know why they're here, which is really to look for money.
Yeah.
And so once you've signed the document, it basically gives them carte blanche for whatever they found there at the scene.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you gave us permission. So, you know, look, I like that there is that ambiguity there. And I love that ambiguity is there because it's showing how difficult these guys' jobs are,
mm-hmm.
In trying to keep their streets safe. And I mean, not only that too, but I mean, there's the whole juxtaposition between these cops and the local cops. And I think it's Haleah is the name of the little city outside Miami there in the suburbs, where most of these cops seem to be either on the payroll or or, you know, just give the cartels a wide berth where the cartels have actually bought all these little subdivisions where they can, you know. So I think, and look, I'm glad that this movie came out when it did, because I also just think, again, what it does is remind us of the difficulty of the job that our law enforcement agencies have in a world where nobody seems to, like, care about what's actually happening. I mean, when you think about what these cartels are probably into, it's not just drugs, but it's also going to be like human trafficking and things like that. And this money allows them to be able to do basically whatever they want to do, because they can buy whoever they need to buy to make these things happen. And then you have these good cops who are looking to take as much of that money off the streets so that they don't have carte blanche to just be able to do whatever they want because they have the money. And even though they say $20 million, you know, whatever, take as much as you want, it's like, yeah, nobody doesn't miss $20 million. I don't care how much money you make, you know. And so I really appreciated that about the film. And I think it's one of those things where it actually elevated the film for me in some ways because of the milieu we're living in right now with, you know, the way people feel about law enforcement. And here it's just like, yeah, these guys are just good guys. They are trying to do the right thing in a world that doesn't seem to care whether they do it or not. Even on their force. And I thought that was great.
It's really, and the tattoos just add to it, where the ambiguity is and the tension is felt not only by the audience watching the literal tension, but by the characters of Matt Damon's, like, there's this tension. Are we the good guys? You know, are we that? It's really good.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. Well, and like you said, they're feeling that tension, especially knowing that they may have to bend some rules because people on their force are also against them.
Right.
You know, they're between kind of like a rock and a hard place here.
Yeah, literally. Yeah.
Yeah. And so we've mentioned obviously the cast with the fact that Damon and Affleck are in this and Steven Yeun and Tiana Taylor. How did you think the cast worked together? And was there anybody that you felt like didn't kind of live up, or, you know, just didn't seem to fit within this group, or did it all work for you?
Yeah, I mean, Damon and Affleck are great, as always. I mean, they're some of my favorite actors literally ever. They were both awesome. There's, like, people that we didn't get enough from, in my opinion. Like, I don't know much about Catalina Moreno as Lolo, Detective Lolo. I don't know much about her. I don't know what I've seen her in. She wasn't bad or anything like that. But so she was just felt like nothing, like kind of nothing. Tiana Taylor, I think, is a brilliant actress. She's currently nominated for an Academy Award. Like, she's very, very good. And she didn't do a whole lot. Like, she counted money for the most part. And so it's like, yeah, I wish she was more involved, but I understand it's not really about her. It's about Damon and Affleck. Steven Yeun, I thought, was good as well. He wasn't, like, he played his role pretty well, I think. But again, I wasn't, like, highly impressed with it, but, like, a ton until, like, that one scene I really loved him in.
Yes.
And I think Kyle Chandler's, like, Kyle Chandler is one of those guys. He's not technically an A-lister, but everyone knows his face and everyone sees him in a movie. And when he pops up, when you don't know he was in the cast list, you're like, heck yeah, I'm so glad this guy's here. Cause he just, he's a great actor, provides whatever, like, one of our great character actors, whatever he does, he's awesome in. And I thought he added, I mean, him going back and forth with Damon, awesome. The chemistry from the whole cast was really good. It seemed like they were having a lot of fun making this movie. For the most part, like, loved the cast. I guess Sasha Kell is a great actress too. She was good as well. Didn't have a lot to do.
You know what's so funny is that I just lost the fact that she was in this movie in the sense of like, oh, wait, yeah, she's also Supergirl, yeah. You know? And so that was such an interesting thing, you know, to see her in this and to see her play, obviously, a very different type of role than that. Because that's the only thing I had seen her in previously. So I thought she was great. You know, I think you're absolutely right. With, you know, Kyle Chandler, I think he's just kind of a gift when it comes to acting. He can legit do anything, which he can be the best of the best, like in Friday Night Lights, where he's a man who just seems like the I Ching of men and what men are actually supposed to be. And then he can just play this type of guy where he is a skis ball, right? Yeah. Like an absolute like turd of a man who is willing to do whatever it takes to make, you know, $10 million, and he's willing to kill whoever it takes. And so I thought that was fantastic. And what I love about Damon and Affleck together, because they have that chemistry of being so close and being best friends, it's such an effortless thing to see them on screen together. Oh, it's like they're not even trying. And part of that is probably because they're not, because they're just getting to be themselves with each other. And yet at the same time, both of them put in great performances here. I especially think that watching Damon play all sides of this as he does, where he makes you believe, oh, I think he could turn. Like, I think, you know, he could turn out to be the bad guy, which is interesting because, you know, when he got the text at the beginning, I immediately thought, okay, either that comes from the cop who just got shot and is dead, or he's the guy that's behind it. And what I loved about that is that you couldn't nail it down until I felt like they made the reveal, and that is because Damon plays it so well.
I was literally guessing the whole movie. As much as someone wants to be like, I figured it out. The twist, I figured it out. It's like, I didn't know. I was like, it could definitely be Matt Damon. I could definitely see a fact where he's working with the girls and he's turning on his best friend. I don't know why, but I could see it. It doesn't make sense to me. I feel like Ben Affleck in this movie. I didn't think that Kyle Chandler was in on it until towards the end, you know, where like, I was like, wait, oh. So, yeah, I think Damon's performance really does. I mean, everyone is relatively great. Kyle Chandler, I think, is very good. Ben Affleck, very good. But it does ride on Damon being like playing this very recluse kind of like can't nail him down character. And if he doesn't do that, then it would not work. So you have to give him props.
100%. I agree, man. What did you've mentioned this a couple of times. But I think one of the things about this film, and as we talked a little bit beforehand, you know, about all the stuff that it means to kind of be a Netflix film, in a lot of ways, that became a slogan and a tagline for the way they looked.
Yeah.
What did you think about the way this film looks? Because that felt like, as I was watching it, a really big part of this movie, its cinematography.
I mean, I thought it looked great. There wasn't anything where I was like, oh, that looks like bad. There's Netflix movies where I'm like, yikes. Like, I watched that Wrecking Crew movie on Amazon. Not a good looking movie. It's kind of fun, but it looks bad. And not one instant. I mean, the lighting in this movie is really good. That one scene, like I said, in the car where they're literally just using the street lights of whatever city it's filming
fantastic.
In. I'm like, oh, this is awesome. Like, this is so awesome. And so, yeah, it's like this movie doesn't belong on Netflix. This movie belong, like, I should have seen this on a, in a theater. Like, I should have seen this with,
I would have loved that too,
you know, with loud sounds and a big screen. 'Cause it does truly look, really, really good. I thought it was one of the strongest elements of it. So,
That was one of the places where, you know, watching it, one, I'm very thankful my wife allowed me to get a OLED and that I have an Atmos system.
Totally.
Because it did make a difference with the film, with the gunshots, you know, that are whizzing by and different scenes. Mm-hmm. All of that really came to life in a way that was really important for the movie. And so I think that the look of the film was almost perfect. There were a couple of spots where, you know, everybody uses just CGI fire these days and it drives yeah, me crazy. Yeah. Can we just use real fire, please? Because I can tell what CGI fire looks like and it doesn't look real.
Yeah.
But apart from that, just the way that we're using shadows in the movie. I mean, I think of that, that scuffle that happens between Affleck's character and Steven Yeun's character, mm-hmm. right? And you can't tell because of the light and the dark and the way it's shot that he's taken, you know, the burner phone there mm-hmm. in that moment, which is great.
It's awesome.
And that's really important scene, of course, too. And again, part of that is that because that way that they have been lighting the scenes, there's just enough shadow and darkness to be able to hide those things mm-hmm. and make it feel very real when they show it to you again, where it's like, oh yeah, I just didn't see that because where they had the camera, I wouldn't have been able to see that because of the lighting scheme.
And it works it works thematically with what the movie's trying to do as well.
Yes.
Which is just like,
yes,
thank you. I really appreciate that you're not just saying, like, we do talk about the plot, you know, just explaining everything, but they do use the actual lighting and the way the camera's moving to help tell the story, which is awesome.
Yes. I mean, and maybe this is sad to say, but, you know, when it comes to, and this is the stereotype of the Netflix movie, but it's like, thank you for not phoning it in.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think that this movie in any way phones it in. So, mm-hmm. I'm going to be really fascinated, right? Because I feel like we've had pretty much nothing but effusive praise for the movie
yeah.
up to this point.
Mm-hmm.
And so, with your kind of like final thoughts and ratings for this movie, where do you think you're going to land for The Rip?
Yeah, I don't know if we've talked about this before, like in terms of like how I rate movies, but it is ultimately just comes down to like a feeling, you know, a vibe of like, these are arbitrary numbers, but because I like raving about, like, I love it. I had a lot of fun. I've watched it a second time. If my wife told me in 2 months, she's like, can we watch The Rip? I'd be like, heck yeah. That sounds like a good time. I landed at a 4-star. It's a great movie. It's solid. It's fun. It's not perfect. It's not like written by Aaron Sorkin or, you know, whatever, but like, it's awesome. I had a great time. I love these actors. If I got a movie like this every year, I'd be so happy. So I landed at a 4. Where'd you land?
Yeah, I actually landed at the same spot. Mm-hmm. And that's because in a lot of ways, now the movies that I'm going to name here are better than this movie, but it reminded me, it's in the vein of a films like The Training Training Day, Sicario, The Town, The Departed. All of those movies are better movies than mm-hmm, this.
Totally.
But this movie feels like it's in that same type of family of film.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they actually do a pretty good job in this movie. And part of that is just that, you know, a lot of times I feel like in films, I can tell, you know, who's good, who's bad
yeah.
too easily.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a movie where I think they did a good job mm-hmm. of making it more difficult to know who those characters are.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that because it keeps me more invested in the movie, and it's just a more enjoyable watch if I don't feel like I can figure it all out, you know, in 5 minutes. And so whether they did everything perfect, this movie I felt like was better than it had any right to be. And a big part of that is because they chose the cast well. Mm-hmm. And then those people delivered on this story in a way that I did find moving and harrowing and kind of edge of my seat thriller type of thing about what's going to happen, who's going to live, who's going to die, who's going to be the good guy, who's going to be the bad guy. Mm-hmm. And that's what you want.
Yep.
And so, dude, I'm super excited that we got a chance to talk about this one. I'm glad you suggested it because, yeah, I went and saw Mercy, and it's like it would have been, I guess, maybe some interesting things, but yeah. On a whole, it wasn't great. But no. We're actually going to get together, though. You're going to be back at the end of the month here, Rye, because there's a movie that you've never seen.
It's true.
And we're going to watch it, and we're going to talk about The Patriot because we figured, you know, 4th of July area, it's going to be busy with films, right? Because all the new stuff is going to be coming out here, and the 602 Club will be busy with that. But it's America 250 year, so we figured let's celebrate that with the Patriot. So I'm glad you're going to be back. But if people wanted to catch up with you, man, talk about films and all that type of stuff with you, where would they find you?
You can head over to my kind of movie Instagram called Rye Talks About, RYTALKS, and then About. Or you can follow me on Letterboxd for really all of my movie opinions, reviews, and thoughts at 182nd, O-N-E-82-N-D.
Awesome, man. Well, I'm excited. You can find me, of course, all over social media under the name MattRushing02. If I'm on that platform, that's the name you'll find me. You can also find the 602 Club over on Letterboxd. We're at the 602 Club, so check us out there. You can see all the things we've reviewed. And then, of course, you can find me here on the network outside the 602 Club with a lot of great Star Trek talk. My good friend Chris Jones, as we talk about, you know, Star Trek Voyager, Star Trek Deep Space Nine. We've got Strange New Worlds that'll be coming back at some point and all that kind of thing. So check all those out. And you can also find me over on the Nerd Party Network with two shows. One's completed called Outpost, talking about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series, one chapter at a time, as well as being over on Aggressive Negotiations, talking about Star Wars each and every week with the great John Mills. But thank you so much for joining us. And y'all come back now, you hear? ¶¶